Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Monday, March 31st is Cesar Chavez Day in California and seven other states. It commemorates the birthday of the tenacious farm workers organizer and civil rights leader. Now, 21 years after Chavez's death, a petition drive has been launched asking President Barack Obama to declare March 31st a National Day of Service. You can view or sign the petition at takepart.com or at the eastcountymagazine.org website. In addition, a new movie, Cesar Chavez, History is Made One Step at a Time, debuted this past weekend in theaters across the nation, and it's showing locally in San Diego and East County. The movie documents Chavez's courage amid turbulent times as he fought for a better way of life for farm workers and their families. His granddaughter, Cynthia Chavez Ibarra, says her grandfather is a hero who taught her very valuable life lessons. She said, "He showed me how to be proud of who I am, where I came from, and a deep conviction for social justice."
Like the other immigrant groups, the day will come when we win the economic and political rewards which are in keeping with our numbers in society. The day will come when the politicians will do the right thing for our people out of political necessity and not out of charity or idealism.
Born in Yuma, Arizona in 1927 to parents of Mexican descent, Cesar Chavez was an American citizen. His parents lost their ranch and grocery store in the Depression, so they moved to California. As a child, Chavez saw his parents toil in the fields picking crops. In seventh grade, he dropped out of school to become a migrant farm worker so that his mother would not have to work in the fields. He later joined the U.S. Navy and then returned to marry his high school sweetheart and start his family, raising eight children. He continued working in the fields until 1952, when he became an organizer in a Latino civil rights group, the Community Service Organization, helping to register Mexican Americans to vote and speaking out for workers' rights. Like Gandhi and later Martin Luther King, Chavez believed in nonviolent means of standing up for people's rights. He and Dolores Huerta founded the National Farm Workers Association, which merged with another organization and later became the United Farm Workers. In the mid-1960s, Chavez led efforts to launch a boycott against grapes grown in California in a successful effort to win safer working conditions and fairer contracts for workers.
In the beginning of the strike, we had many terrible experiences, and we found that the growers in the beginning thought that this was going to be a honeymoon strike. It was going to be like most strikes in farm work in the agriculture industry, that it was going to last maybe 3 days, and then it's going to sort of drop, and then in about 10 or 12 days or 2 weeks at the most, the strike was going to be over and the people were going to go back to work. And I think this was their first major mistake, because it's almost now 4 months and we're still going at it very strongly. And then when they realized that this wasn't going to stop the people, then they started using violence, and they started bringing out their shotguns, and when I say shotguns, I mean in a good many cases they did. And they started hiring guards to guard the entrances to their properties, and also the guards in two occasions felt that they had to draw their firearms on us to discourage us. And of course, they weren't successful. The more they did this, the more encouragement we got and the more sure we were of what we were doing.
The strike lasted 5 years and led a U.S. Senate subcommittee to hold hearings in California on the strike, during which time subcommittee member Robert F. Kennedy voiced support for the striking workers. In the 1970s, the UFW organized more strikes, including the Salad Bowl, the largest farmworker strike in American history, winning higher wages as well as passage of the California Agricultural Labor Relations Act, giving farmworkers collective bargaining rights. Then in the 1980s, Chavez led a national boycott against California grape growers to draw public attention to the dangers that pesticides pose to farm workers' health. He engaged in several lengthy fasts during these protests, including one that lasted for 25 days. Under Chavez's leadership, the United Farm Workers Union did not advocate illegal immigration and, in fact, sought to restrict immigration. because the leaders believed the Bracero program exploited migrant workers and undermined American workers by bringing in a cheap supply of labor for growers. The UFW was instrumental in persuading Congress to end the Bracero program and even proposed employer sanctions that would have prohibited hiring undocumented immigrants. Though later, Chavez helped secure amnesty for millions of undocumented immigrants in the 1986 Federal Immigration Act. Chavez received many honors during his lifetime, including the Jefferson Award for Greatest Public Service Benefiting the Disadvantaged, and an award named after an encyclical by Pope John XXIII, calling for peace on earth. President Bill Clinton awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom posthumously to Chavez's widow, Helen Chavez, in 1994, and Chavez was also nominated three times for a Nobel Peace Prize. Since his death in 1993, his memory has been honored with several parks named after him, including one in San Diego, the National Cesar Chavez Center in Keene, California, induction into the California Hall of Fame, and even the U.S. Navy named a ship after him. In its heyday, the United Farm Workers Union had 50,000 members, and though that has dwindled through the years, Chavez supporters want to assure that his memory lives on and that future generations will remember the legacy of Cesar Chavez.
Once social change begins, it cannot be reversed. You cannot uneducate the person who has learned to read. You cannot humiliate the person who feels pride. You cannot oppress the people who are not afraid anymore.
Though Chavez is gone, his spirit lives on in the many people his efforts benefited, and in the motto he adopted that urged workers to believe that a better life was possible. Si se puede. Yes, one can.
A jury has awarded $1.3 million in punitive damages to David Bryant, a former billing supervisor at SDG&E. Bryant claimed the company fired him after he complained that SDG&E was targeting delinquency notices to low-income ratepayers so that SDG&E could make money from the late payment fees. Bryant also won more than $860,000 in compensation in addition to the punitive damages award. According to Bryant, SDG&E ordered employees to hand-deliver delinquency notices to inner-city homes starting in 2008, and the company assessed a $9 charge to ratepayers for this action. SDG&E was found guilty of wrongful termination and retaliating against Bryant for speaking out. The company issued a statement indicating its plans to appeal the verdict. SDG&E says its investigation found Bryant was terminated due to extremely inappropriate conduct for a supervisor and for violating company policies. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. The California Public Utilities Commission made a final decision last week that has solar homeowners celebrating. The commission unanimously voted to protect California's solar customers' net energy metering contracts for the next 20 years. Net energy metering allows the meter to spin backwards, giving customers full credit for electricity produced by solar panels that is not used in the building. The highly anticipated decision is part of Assembly Bill 327. This is considered a huge victory for solar power customers, as well as for property owners who are looking to go solar in the near future. Daniel Sullivan, president and founder of Sullivan Solar Power in San Diego, predicts there will be an unprecedented surge in demand for solar power as a result of this decision. It is clearly in the best interest for property owners to go solar now, locking in 20 years of protection, he said, adding that the average payback period for a cash purchase of a residential commercial solar power system is now just 4 to 6 years. With the new rules, these solar producers will have 15 years of free electricity. Commissioner Mike Floria said that even after the 20-year transition period, there will be benefits in the future for customers who put in solar. Floria concluded that one of the commission's goals was to preserve a vibrant solar market, and this decision definitely leaves a bright future for California's solar industry.
This is Ed Barreno with the Weather Report. The National Weather Service has issued a wind advisory for San Diego County's mountains and deserts from late afternoon Monday through Wednesday morning. A low-pressure system from the Gulf of Alaska will bring strong west winds with gusts up to 65 miles per hour. High winds will make driving difficult, especially for high-profile vehicles such as SUVs. Watch for broken tree limbs and, in desert areas, blowing sands. The National Weather Service is predicting colder and wetter weather for this week, with showers starting Tuesday morning. The showers will decrease in coverage Tuesday afternoon and evening before increasing again on Wednesday as low pressure settles over our area. The storm is expected to drop as much as 1.5 inches of precipitation over the mountain areas, with snow dropping to 4,500 feet overnight on Tuesday. Later in the week, expect clearing, though temperatures will remain cool through Friday.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report on one of the most bizarre political stories of the year. In Sacramento, Capitol Hill is reeling over charges against Senator Leland Yee, alleging corruption and conspiracy to smuggle firearms. An FBI sting reportedly includes evidence revealing Yee caught on tape setting up a meeting with an arms broker for an undercover federal agent to purchase shoulder-fired missiles and other weapons from Muslim extremists in the Philippines. Yee has also been tied to Chinatown organized crime leader Raymond Chow, better known as Shrimp Boy. Lee, a Democrat and California's first Chinese senator, will appear on the June ballot statewide as a candidate for Secretary of State, although he announced his withdrawal after the charges against him were filed. That opens the door now for the five other candidates in the Secretary of State's race, since incumbent Secretary of State Deborah Bowen must step down due to term limits. This is an important position, since the Secretary of State can take steps to protect election integrity, as Bowen did when she decertified voting machines that could easily be hacked. Or, conversely, a Secretary of State who engages in partisan politics, such as Florida's Katherine Harris did during a disputed presidential race when she was a co-chair of a presidential candidate's campaign, can cast the integrity of elections into doubt. On the Democratic side, there are two contenders running for California's Secretary of State seat. Derek Cressman is the former vice president of Common Cause, a nonprofit organization advocating for open and transparent government in the public interest. Cressman has been outspoken against secret money funding political campaigns. Yes, the very kind of secret money that Yee was reportedly accepting from all the wrong places. Democratic State Senator Alex Padilla of Los Angeles is also in the race. On Friday, Senator Padilla voted to suspend Yee from the state Senate and has further called on Yee to resign, calling the allegations against Yee shocking and disturbing. On the Republican side of the aisle is Pete Peterson, executive director of the Davenport Institute for Public Engagement at Pepperdine University, which researches current policy issues. Now, former Republican strategist Daniel Schnoor is also in the race running as an independent. He was the spokesperson for Governor Pete Wilson and for Republican presidential candidate John McCain. He also formerly chaired the California Fair Political Practices Commission, and he says he wants all donations disclosed within 24 hours. In addition, architectural designer David Curtis is running on the Green Party ticket. Curtis sees a need to break the two-party system to halt corruption in government in both parties and says his donations are being reported in real time online to provide full transparency to voters. In the state Senate, ironically, Leland Yee was best known for his efforts to strengthen open records, government transparency, and whistleblower protection laws. Late last week, Yee's Senate colleagues voted to suspend him with pay, along with two other senators involved in criminal proceedings. One of these, Rod Wright, was convicted of filing false voter registration at an address not in his district. The third senator, Ron Calderon, is facing corruption charges. Senate leader Daryl Steinberg has said there is no provision in the Senate to suspend these members without pay, but they could have considered expulsion. The balance of power in the legislature hangs in the balance, because Democrats would lose their two-thirds supermajority needed to pass tax measures or override a governor's veto if any one of these senators leaves office before the election. Despite this, Democratic Senators Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein have both called on Yee to resign. The only vote cast against the suspension of Yee and the other two senators was cast by East County's Republican Senator Joel Anderson, who told us on Saturday that the measure did not go far enough in his view. He supports expulsion of the members instead of what he calls more paid holidays for bad behavior. And we'll end today with a clip from Senator Anderson's floor speech on this important measure.
So which is it today? More smoke and mirrors? More paid holidays for bad behavior? I don't know about you, but when I raised my kids, the one rule my wife and I had was that if you reward bad behavior, you're going to get more of it. How is it sitting at home, watching TV or doing whatever your pleasure, perhaps playing golf, getting paid by the state senate and the people and not having any responsibility to do the work is acceptable in a punishment in any way, shape, or form? What we're doing is incentivizing bad behavior with this resolution.
Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with some good news about your future utility bills. SDG&E ratepayers may soon be getting a refund if a tentative settlement agreement is approved by the California Public Utilities Commission. Here's why. After the San Onofre nuclear facility was shut down in 2012 due to faulty steam generators, SDG&E and Southern California Edison kept charging ratepayers for the costs associated with replacing those generators, even though they never provided any more power. In June 2013, Edison announced the shutdown would be permanent and the facility decommissioned. An agreement was reached last week between Edison, the Utility Reform Network, and the Public Utility Commission's Office of Ratepayer Advocates. The settlement calls for SDG&E and Edison to refund all revenues associated with the replacement steam generator costs collected since February 1, 2012. In addition, the utilities will remove other San Onofre-related investments made after that date from their rate base and recover them at a reduced rate of return over 10 years, which will result in ongoing benefits for ratepayers. SDG&E's CEO, Jeffrey Martin, called the settlement fair and reasonable and said it balances the interests of customers and shareholders. He added, the settlement ensures that customers will not have to pay for San Onofre's faulty steam generators post-shutdown and also allows shareholders to recoup most of their investments in the plant, which operated for 40 years. Ray Lutz of El Cajon, the National Coordinator for Citizens Oversight and a party at the proceeding under the Coalition to Decommission San Onofre name, also voiced satisfaction with the agreement. He said, our organization will be reviewing the settlement agreement, and we will likely file a formal comment. However, it does seem like a reasonable compromise in many respects at first glance. As part of a settlement, SDG&E will be allowed to recover the cost of the replacement power procured for customers while San Onofre was not operating. SDG&E stated that it intends to vigorously pursue cost recovery from the manufacturers of the steam generators, Mitsubishi Heavy Industries, as well as from insurance companies. As a 20% owner of the shuttered nuclear plant, SDG&E is entitled to 20% of any such recoveries and would allocate a portion of anything it recovers to customers as prescribed in the settlement. There's a 30-day comment period on this proposed settlement. The Public Utilities Commission is expected to make a final decision in the second quarter of this year. The settlement benefits ratepayers by about $1.4 billion more than what Edison had originally asked for in the investigation before consumer groups pushed for a higher settlement that would be more equitable to ratepayers.
For the second time in about 6 months, the San Diego County Water Authority has received several reports of scam artists attempting to mislead homeowners by telling them their water is polluted and offering to test it. There are no water safety problems in the Water Authority's service area. The Water Authority has received more than 15 reports of scam calls countywide. Similar regional cons occurred periodically, most recently in September 2013. The Water Authority and its 24 member agencies are not responsible for fixing problems or testing inside private residences and rarely have reason to ask for entry. Water agencies also typically don't sell or endorse commercial products. If a water agency representative were to need in-home contact with the customer, someone would call first to make an appointment. Residents are advised that if anyone claiming to be a water utility employee comes to your home without an appointment, you should refuse entry and contact their local water agency. Legitimate water agency employees will have proper identification, be willing to show it, and provide a supervisor's phone number at the agency for verification. They typically will be driving clearly marked agency vehicles with government license plates. Homeowners should check any phone number provided for verification with the number for their water agency on their water bill or in the phone book to make sure it is legitimate. Any supposed water agency employee who refuses to wait while the agency is contacted should be considered a fraud and reported to police. Utility scams take many forms, including requests for bill payment with a credit card, demands that residents buy certain water treatment products, and sales pitches for waterline insurance. In some cases, imposters go door to door. Other times, they operate by phone. Imposters may work in pairs, with one person talking to a resident while another cases the home for valuables. Some water authority members' agencies have posted additional information about the current scam on their websites. Residents who aren't sure which water agency serves their property can go to sdcwa.org and enter their address under Find Your Water District. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Welcome to Job Talk, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy. This is Miriam Raftery with some good news for job seekers. If you're looking to develop your skills to transition to a new career, or if you're re-entering the workforce after time away, Congresswoman Susan Davis invites you to attend a free Career Reentry and Development Panel program. The event will be held on April 5th from 10 a.m. to noon at San Diego State University's Alumni Center. Check-in and networking starts at 9:30 a.m. Participants will hear from local experts who will give an overview of opportunities in San Diego for people who are interested in becoming more competitive in today's economy. Expect to hear from experts on apprenticeship opportunities, programs offered through community colleges, extended studies programs, and an overview of the local labor market. There will also be plenty of time for questions and answers. You'll find free parking in Lot 5, which is immediately next to the Alumni Center. Space is limited, so you need to RSVP by calling 619-280-5353. You can also RSVP online and get more details at Congresswoman Susan Davis's website.
A search and rescue crew has located two hikers at Three Sisters Falls who were lost in the wilderness overnight. Shortly after 8 p.m. Wednesday night, one of the hikers called the Sheriff's Communications Center to report that he and a friend were lost in the rugged terrain in Cleveland National Forest near Julian. Their cell phone was dying, and they could not find their way back to their vehicle, said Sergeant Carlos Medina at the Julian Sheriff's substation. A sheriff's search and rescue team responded, but darkness and weather hindered the effort. Thursday morning, the search continued. At 7:45 a.m., the hiker and his female companion were located and brought back to their vehicle at the trailhead. Both were safe and suffered no injuries. The incident serves as a reminder that when hiking in the wilderness, it's wise to be sure your cell phone is fully charged. If possible, carry a cell phone equipped with a GPS to help rescuers locate you in case of an accident, injury, or if you become lost. Carry extra water, food, a blanket, and a flashlight. Wear sturdy hiking shoes and carry basic first aid items. If hiking to waterfalls in Cleveland National Forest, a permit is required. When hiking in the backcountry, always let someone know where you are going and when you expect to return. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Raina Menashe with an important health report. Cases of pertussis, or whooping cough, are on the rise in San Diego County, far outpacing activity at this point last year. 10 new cases, where others may have been exposed, were reported to the San Diego County Health and Human Services Agency in the past week, bringing the total number of cases to 154 so far this year. The number of cases of pertussis reported last year was only 33. The new cases include students in East County at Cajon Valley Middle School, St. Martin's of Tours Academy in La Mesa, and other cases occurred in San Diego, Poway, and North County. We're seeing a very high level of pertussis activity throughout San Diego County, said Wilma Wooten, County Public Health Officer. Parents, caregivers, and educators should be on the lookout for symptoms, so those with pertussis get treatment so they don't infect others. It's also important that everyone obtain the recommended vaccines, she added. A typical case of pertussis starts with a cough and runny nose for 1 to 2 weeks, followed by weeks to months of rapid coughing fits that sometimes end with a whooping sound. Fever, if present, is usually mild. Antibiotics can lessen the severity of symptoms and prevent the spread of disease to others. Parents can obtain the vaccine series and booster shot for themselves and their children through their primary care physicians. Local retail pharmacies offer vaccinations for a fee, and anyone who is not covered by a medical insurance plan can get the shot from a county public health center at minimal or no cost. For more information about whooping cough and ongoing vaccination clinics, call the HHSA Immunization Branch at 866-358-2966 or visit www.sdiz.org. Attention Shutterbugs! Mission Trails Regional Park invites you to enter its 22nd annual amateur photo contest. The deadline for entries is September 6th. All entries will be on display from September 13th to October 10th, and an awards presentation will be held for winners. All photos must be taken from inside Mission Trails Regional Park on a designated trail. Photos can be digital or film, and entries must be mounted and the complete entry no larger than 8.5 by 11 inches, including mounting or optional matting. You can get the complete rules online at Mission Trails Regional Park's website at www.mtrp.org or at the Visitor Center. You can also view last year's winners on the park's photo contest page.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with more troubling news about an energy company that wants to build a wind energy facility in East County's McCain Valley. Last week, we reported on the latest in a string of fires at Iberdrola wind facilities, most recently at a Pennsylvania site. Some of these fires involved turbines made by Gamesa, a company in which Iberdrola owns a controlling interest. Now, East County Magazine has learned that in New Hampshire, the state fire marshal has accused Iberdrola of violating fire safety codes and lying to an oversight committee about the fire marshal's requirements at its Groton wind facility. The fire marshal has announced that he may issue a stop work order to shut down that facility completely. That should spark concern here in San Diego, where supervisors and the federal government recently approved Tule Wind, an Iberdrola wind project slated to go into a region prone to catastrophic wildfires, including the 2007 Harris Fire that was fueled by 100-mile-an-hour hurricane-force winds. Campgrounds are located in McCain Valley, where Iberdrola aims to line the only road in and out with wind turbines, each filled with hundreds of gallons of flammable lubricating oil. Former CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Mark Ostrander has warned that firefighters can't fight fires. Under a flaming turbine whirling off debris, and aerial drops won't work at heights above 300 feet. The turbines are 500 feet tall, so firefighters would have to wait for the fire to burn outside the wind facility. That could result in a firestorm that could burn into urban San Diego areas, he has warned. Oh, and that area is protected by the Boulevard Fire Station. Now, during the Shockey Fire in Boulevard, many residents were left to put out fires at their own homes, claiming they never saw a fire truck in the entire area. The fire marshal in New Hampshire said Iberdrola failed to submit plans to his office for review and also failed to comply with fire safety requirements. Among other things, the fire marshal has mandated an automatic fire suppression system be installed to cover hazards such as the bearing oil and transformers. But Iberdrola never scheduled inspections by the fire marshal before starting up its operations. As a result, the fire marshal there concluded public safety could not be ensured due to Iberdrola's failure to comply with both the state fire code and the building code. We've contacted the fire marshal there and asked for an update on that situation. Lori Lerner is president of New Hampshire Windwatch, a citizens group, and she says Iberdrola has demonstrated a reckless disregard for New Hampshire's rules and its residents. Now, as a result of these disturbing incidents, East County Magazine has contacted the San Diego supervisors to ask whether a revote on Iberdrola's Thule Wind project should occur. As of deadline, only one supervisor's office has answered. A spokesperson in Supervisor Jacobs' office advised that she remains very concerned about this project as the only supervisor who voted against it. But for a major use permit on Thule Wind to be revoked, it would take more than merely showing problems at another project elsewhere. To revoke or modify the approval of Thule Wind, one or more of these findings would have to be made, we're told. That the permit was obtained by fraud, that one or more of the conditions of the permit were violated, or that use is conducted in a way that is detrimental to public health, welfare, or safety, and considered a nuisance. Another Iberdrola project in New York is facing nuisance claims. There, residents are suing Iberdrola's noise expert after the project resulted in noise levels that exceeded the maximum decibels allowed. The same noise expert reportedly prepared the noise reports for Iberdrola on Thule Wind here. Instead of correcting the problem to protect residents' health and well-being, Iberdrola offered beleaguered New York residents noise machines to drown out the annoying sound of turbines that some likened to helicopters hovering over their homes. As evidence mounts of Iberdrola's disregard for the health and safety of neighbors living near its wind facilities elsewhere, people in East County are asking what it will take for the majority of San Diego's supervisors to take action and protect local residents.
A tragic accident near Hamul has claimed the life of a skydiver. 27-year-old Jordan Janway from San Diego was a skydiving instructor at Skydive San Diego on Otay Lakes Road in Hamul. A master parachutist and rigger, he had skydived over 1,000 times. But on Sunday afternoon, he collided with another skydiver in midair while teaching students. Authorities believe he may have been knocked unconscious and his parachute never opened. He was reported missing, prompting an intensive search by sheriff's deputies, Border Patrol agents, CAL FIRE firefighters, and about 20 skydiving volunteers. The sheriff's helicopter ultimately found the missing skydiver's body. Ironically, a device that could have saved his life had reportedly been sent out for maintenance before the fateful dive. A spokesman at Skydive San Diego told media that Janway normally carried a chip in his parachute to automatically open it in case of emergency. Those devices are required for skydivers with fewer than 1,000 jumps, but they are optional for more experienced skydivers. This tragedy highlights the fact that skydiving can be risky even for the most experienced participants. So if you decide to participate in this sport, it's wise to always carry a parachute equipped with a chip for emergency deployment, which could save your life. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Ed Barreno with some big news for sports fans. The San Diego Padres have been holding announcer tryouts for several weeks. Almost 800 candidates were given a shot. It looked almost as if American Idol was in town. All contestants received a script as judges listened in an undisclosed location in Petco Park. Dreamers, professional broadcasters, and writers were in the mix to try and become the new voice of the San Diego Padres. The field has now been narrowed down to just 30 contestants. The finalists include 3 women, a broad range of ethnicities, and people from across our region, including 4 from East County. Alan Wild, Doug Herman, and Patrick Connor, all of El Cajon, and Randy Mann of La Mesa. Alan Wild has lived in El Cajon for several years. It has always been a dream of his to be an announcer. He sells motorcycle parts during the day for JP Motorsports in Chula Vista. His behind-the-mic experience includes announcing for Little League games and working as a DJ at local weddings. Doug Herman has resided in El Cajon since 1972. He has been actively involved in baseball his whole life, serving as a league official, president of El Cajon Pony League and San Diego Adult Baseball League. Patrick Connor is also a longtime El Cajon resident. "Since I was a teen, many of my friends have told me I have the voice for radio," he said. He has vocalized for U.S. Navy training programs and IRS programs. He has also taken professional voice acting classes. Randy Mann, a BMW sales representative from La Mesa with radio voiceover experience, is also in the running for the coveted San Diego Padres announcer spot. During the season's first series against Los Angeles, now through April 2nd, each of the top 30 will have a chance to announce part of a regular season game at Petco Park. Padres fans will then have a say in who moves on. There will be a fan vote online and via social media in early April to help narrow down the field from 30 to just 10. Those 10 finalists will each announce parts of a Padres game between April 11th and April 20th before the contestants are narrowed down to the top 3. As their final tryout, each of those 3 will announce a full game. The winner and new voice of the San Diego Padres will be announced on April 18th when the Padres take the field against the San Francisco Giants. Good luck to all the contestants. And go Padres!
Sexual assault advocates are demanding changes in the handling of crucial evidence from rape cases in California. It's estimated tens of thousands of rape kits are sitting on evidence shelves waiting to be processed. Natasha Alexenko was raped at gunpoint while she was a student in New York, but DNA evidence from her case went untouched for nearly a decade.
During that time, my rape kit sat and collected dust. The man that viciously attacked me was on a nationwide crime spree, and he was leaving a host of victims in his wake. He was causing a public safety issue.
A bill moving through the state legislature would specify time frames for the testing of rape kits and for entering the information into a national DNA database. Alexenko, whose rapist was eventually arrested and convicted, says justice matters to victims, their families, and those wrongly accused as well. Assemblywoman Nancy Skinner says her bill would require law enforcement agencies submit rape kits to crime labs within 5 days. The labs would then have 30 days to process the evidence.
So that we demonstrate to survivors of assault that we care, help law enforcement solve crimes, and that we make everyone safer.
The California Association of Crime Lab Directors and California State Sheriff's Association both oppose the bill because of a lack of funding and resources. AB 1517 will be heard in the Assembly Appropriations Committee next month. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
This is Leon Thompson with some news about a program that is helping to provide transportation to seniors and disabled people in rural East County. Raul was blind for 4 years due to diabetes. He lives alone and couldn't leave his house, walk to the store, or do daily tasks. Last winter, he was very cold because he couldn't see well enough to make a warm fire. With the help of Mountain Health's Senior Transportation Program, Raul has been able to get to and from his doctor's appointments, including surgery for his eyes, and pick up his eye drops and diabetes medication. Today, Raul can see 70% better in his right eye after having multiple surgeries. He recently underwent surgery on his left eye that resulted in seeing shadows and light, thanks to a special program through Mountain Health to help seniors in rural East County. Raul has voiced thanks for the program and calls the results of his surgeries a miracle. He has a better outlook on life and states with a huge smile on his face, "My future is looking brighter now that I can see my grandkids," he says. Mountain Health operates 4 federally qualified community health centers throughout San Diego County, including centers in Alpine and Campo here in East County, with a new and expanded Campo clinic planned soon. Mountain Health has been serving the seniors in Mountain Empire and Alpine for many years. With a grant from the San Diego Association of Governments, or SANDAG, Mountain Health offers a senior and disabled transportation program. The senior transportation program is funded by the county's TransNet sales tax. Transportation has always been an issue in the backcountry. With limited bus service and no taxi service, many seniors find it difficult to access basic services such as medical visits, picking up prescriptions, and purchasing groceries. It is difficult at times for seniors to get down the hill because of rising gas costs and the lack of public transportation in the area. Some of these seniors haven't seen a doctor for 4 or 5 years. Through the program, the seniors have also been able to sign up for Social Security benefits that they should have been paid for several years. This has become a valuable service that we can offer to our local seniors and persons with disability, commented Julie Atherton, Senior Resource Coordinator at the Mountain Empire Community Center. The program relies on volunteers who have provided hours of service transporting seniors in the backcountry. These volunteer drivers are finding the experience as valuable for them as for the seniors that they are transporting. Many volunteers have said that the rewards come from the smiles that they bring to their passengers and knowing how important the service is that they are providing. Drivers are required to pass a background check, a basic physical, drug screen, and a TB test. These are paid for by Mountain Health with no cost to the volunteer. Volunteers are also required to have a current driver's license, registration, and vehicle insurance with the DMV printout. Volunteers are then matched with seniors and disabled persons to help them access essential services and other resources, including medical, social services, and shopping. There is a reimbursement for each volunteer's mileage through the SANDAG grant. This program is available to older adults aged 60 or older who are living in their own homes and also to qualified adults who are disabled of all ages. If you are interested in signing up as a volunteer driver, donating, or if you know a senior or disabled person who needs these services, you can contact Julie Atherton at the Mountain Empire Community Center at 619-478-2384 or at the website jatherton at mountainhealth, that's mtnhealth.org. Mountain Health knows the importance in keeping seniors in their homes longer and living a healthy, independent life. We want to reach out to our communities and let them know that we care and can help, Ms. Atherton concluded.
Now it's time for the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz.
Welcome to another edition of the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah. There you go. Our contestants today are Ed and Elizabeth. Welcome.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Thank you.
Okay. Our first question is, Helix Water Board member Kathleen Hedberg recently won a new car on The Price is Right after dressing up in an outrageous costume. What costume did she wear?
I'm going to say butterfly.
Butterfly. That would be pretty.
Godzilla.
Godzilla. Nah. Okay, let me give you some choices here. Multiple choice. Was it an Easter bunny, a drop of water, a surfer, or a banana?
I've got to go with drop of water.
That would have made sense, but it's wrong.
I would go with banana.
You're right. Okay, one point for Ed. Okay. Many unusual animals once roamed the Anza-Borrego Desert in prehistoric times. Which one of these did not? We'll go right to the multiple choice on this one. Was it mastodons, saber-toothed tigers, Tyrannosaurus rex, or giant zebras?
Tyrannosaurus rex.
You are right. That's right. There actually were no dinosaurs that have been found, at least not yet, out there. But we did have zebras and saber-toothed tigers and mastodons.
Who knew?
Okay, who knew? That's right. Okay, next one. Feel free to shout out your questions here. Something unusual recently delayed the Daytona 500 this year while East County's own Jimmy Johnson was competing. What was it?
It was, I want to say, a duck.
A duck. A duck on the racetrack. That'd be pretty dangerous, but nope.
I know this hardly ever happens here, but it rained.
It rained. Actually, it rained and rained and rained and rained. But there was more than just rain, though. So here's the choices. Was it hail, a tornado, an earthquake, or a streaker?
Well, it is NASCAR. There's a lot of beer out there. We could say a streaker.
Nope.
Well, let's go for tornado.
Yes. Yes.
Really?
Tornado warning. Yes. Hmm. That's right. Okay. The term apple picking means more than plucking fruit nowadays. What is the new meaning?
Trying to get away with something you're not supposed to.
Here, was it playing a banjo, shopping for a computer, stealing iPhones, or replanting manzanita trees burned in the wildfires?
Stealing iPhones.
That's right. It's according to the San Diego State University campus police, and it is a trend, unfortunately, nationwide. So hang on to those iPhones. Next question. San Diego Gas and Electric has tripled its estimate for how much water its new eco substation will use during construction of the project. How many gallons will it take?
Should we get our options?
Nobody wants to just hazard a guess here? Okay. Yeah, no. Is it 1 million gallons, 9 million gallons, 19 million gallons, or 90 million gallons?
I'll go for 19. 19 million gallons.
Nope. Mm-mm.
I'll say 90.
90 is right.
Wow.
90 million gallons.
Incredible.
Wow. Last question. Think carefully now. What did San Diego Sheriff's deputies recently take off for a good cause?
Oh, their shirts? I don't know.
That's not right, actually. No. Was it their badges, their boots, their clothes, or their hair?
Their boots.
Nope.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say boots because I know the firefighters do a boot thing.
Yeah, firefighters do pass the boot, but nope. Actually, they shaved off their hair to benefit children with cancer.
Really?
Yes,
they
did.
That's
pretty cool.
I thought so, too. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Trivia Quiz.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. My guest today is Elizabeth Ramos. Elizabeth is the Director of Marketing and Events at the Water Conservation Garden right here at Cuyamaca College in the Rancho San Diego area of East County. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Miriam.
Now, you have a very special exhibit that's just opened. Tell us about it.
We do. I'm so excited to share it with you. We just opened the Dorcas E. Utter Memorial Butterfly Pavilion on Friday. We had a great ribbon-cutting ceremony, and it's now open to the public to come visit the six species of native butterflies we have in there.
Beautiful. Well, that sounds like the utter butterfly experience
it
to me.
It is. It is.
Tell us what the species of butterflies are that people can see there.
Sure. A few of them are monarch butterfly, gulf fritillary, anise swallowtail, cloudless sulfur, California dogface. We've got at least six in there, and that may change up from time to time, but beautiful butterflies.
Oh, very nice. And in addition to the butterflies, you can also see the plants that these butterflies feed on, the flowers and plants that attract them.
Absolutely. So the plants in there are nectar plants, and they provide their food source for adult butterflies. And we really want to inspire the public to create their own butterfly gardens at home. Mm-hmm. Butterflies not only need nectar plants, but they also need what are called host plants, which butterflies lay their eggs on. And when their
right.
caterpillars hatch, they then in turn eat that plant.
Now, these plants are available if people want to purchase them while they're there. They can, correct?
During our butterfly festival, which happens April 5th, we'll have a huge butterfly plant sale. And so that's the day to come out and not only purchase plants, but take some workshops on how to create your own butterfly.
Great. We'll hear more about that in just a moment. But first, I'd like you to tell our listeners a little bit about some of the challenges that our local butterfly populations are facing and why it's so important to help them by planting these plants.
Sure. Because butterflies typically have one or two very specific host plants that they use to lay their eggs, and then sustain their caterpillars. It's important that the butterflies are able to find them out in nature. And more butterfly host plants are not, they're being destroyed by urban sprawl, by wildfires, by changes in climate. And so when you get a decline in the plants that sustain butterfly larvae, you also get a decline in butterfly populations, unfortunately.
Yeah, we just did a report that the monarch butterfly migration down the Pacific coast is down 90% in numbers. And in addition to all the factors that you just mentioned, another is the genetically modified crops that farmers are planting, which are designed to be resistant to insects. They have an herbicide spliced into it. And what that means is that the milkweed is not growing around the big fields in the Midwest and the West Coast and other places. So the butterflies, the monarch butterflies, don't have their milkweed available anymore.
Right. This is, and it's a scary prospect because we don't know what the long-term ramifications will be. Butterflies are second to bees, are the biggest pollinators in nature. And so butterflies pollinate corn. They pollinate a lot of foodstuffs that humans use for our own survival. And so if you've got a decline in the pollination, you can only surmise what will happen to our crops.
Sure. But the good news is there is something folks can do to help. As we've mentioned, you can plant some of these things, milkweed and some of the other plants that will attract butterflies to your garden. And it's also a wonderful experience for children. I know we've done that with my own kids when they were little, and they loved watching a swallowtail chrysalis form and the butterfly hatch out. And you can learn some really interesting facts at the garden over
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. We've got some, not only the experience of going inside the butterfly pavilion and having a docent answer questions, we've got some really wonderful signage that people can kind of do a little self-tour and learn about. But the whole butterfly life cycle is really fascinating, from the time the butterfly lays its egg to the caterpillar coming out, and then it turning into a chrysalis. And I learned recently that it partially liquefies and then becomes a butterfly. And
that's amazing.
It is very amazing, that whole process. It's magical, really.
Well, speaking of magic, tell us about some of the wonderful things that people can expect to see and experience if they come to the Butterfly Festival on April 5th.
Sure. Well, we've got a really exciting pollinator parade. Pollinator parade for adults and children alike. We're encouraging people to dress up as their favorite pollinator, be that a bee, butterfly, bird, or even a bat or a beetle.
And it's winged pollinators.
Pollinators. You can dress as a caterpillar too if you prefer. That's totally fine. And we'll do with Miss Smarty Plants and Miss Metamorphosis, there'll be a parade. And then we'll do a butterfly release, which is not your standard butterfly release. And I'll just leave it at that. It's a surprise.
Well, that sounds fabulous.
Yeah.
I understand that the Natural History Museum will also be out there. And what's that all about?
They will. They're going to be running a butterfly discovery lab for us. And so they'll help people get a more intimate look at butterflies with magnifying glasses and microscopes, so people can look at the wing structure of butterflies and eggs and that sort of thing.
Well, that sounds fabulous. Now, will there be classes and things going on as well?
There will be classes, butterfly experts on hand throughout the day, a fabulous butterfly plant sale. We'll have milkweed for sale, which is the host plant of the monarch. The monarch focuses just on milkweed, so we really want to encourage people to plant that. We'll have crafters out there. We'll have some entertainment.
They can buy beautiful things with butterfly imagery.
Absolutely. Yep. And tours of the garden throughout the day. It's just going to be a really fun, wonderful time for families.
Well, it sounds amazing, Elizabeth. I want to thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ. And if we could end by just letting people know where they can get more information about the Water Conservation Garden and the Butterfly Festival that's coming up on April 5th at Cuyamaca College.
Absolutely. Our website is www.thegarden.org.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This is Ed Barreno with KNSJ. Do you have some old Promatire hanging in your closet that you no longer need? Ramona High School is asking that you donate these items to help students who can't otherwise afford to attend their prom on May 3rd. Going to the prom has long been a highlight of students' high school years. But in addition to the cost of tickets, students have to contend with the cost of formal attire, transportation, flowers, dinner, and more, at a time when many families are struggling economically. In an effort to help students in need, Ramona High School invites you to bring prom attire to the high school office at 1401 Hanson Lane in Ramona between 7 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. on school days. You can help students create memories to last a lifetime.
This is Miriam Raftery with an important safety notice for owners of General Motors vehicles. Recalls have been announced due to several potentially dangerous problems. GM has just announced a recall of over 1 million sports utility vehicles or SUVs due to wiring problems with the side airbags. These airbags may fail to inflate during a crash, though thus far no injuries have occurred, the company says. The models being recalled for airbag issues are GMC Acadias and Buick Enclaves made from 2008 to 2013. Also, Chevrolet Traverse models from 2009 to 2013 and Saturn Outlooks from 2008 to 2010. In addition, GM is recalling over 64,000 Cadillac XTS sedans made in 2013 and 14 due to brakes that have overheated and caused at least 2 fires. Now, these recalls are separate from an earlier announced recall of 1.6 million vehicles due to ignition switch problems, and those have been linked to a dozen deaths. The recalls there include all Chevy Cobalts and Pontiac G5s from 2005 through 2007. Also, all Saturn Ions 2003 to 2007, Chevrolet HHR models from 2006 and 2007, Pontiac Pursuits sold in Canada and made in 2005 or 2006, the Pontiac Solstice in 2006 and 2007, and the 2007 Saturn Sky. If you have one of these vehicles and have not yet received your recall notice, you should contact your vehicle dealer.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.